This is Ross Owen.
Virus database has been updated.
This is Ross Owen. They really know their shite.
Why, this is bigger than the Whispering Steeple in Kansas City.
This is Ross Owen.
Life moves pretty fast. You don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
7 years of college down the drain.
This is Ross Owen.
Great Scott! What the devil are they doing?
The Ross Owen Show is sponsored by DDayHistorian.com.
Hey, 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 how's it going, everybody? Ross Owen here with you here on Black Sky Radio. It's Friday, the 20th of January. On the show today, we have Ross McCall and Jane Fallon. Ross McCall, our friend from Band of Brothers, has a new movie out called In Embryo, and we're going to be talking about that very, very shortly on the show. Jane Fallon is going to be talking about her new book, My Sweet Revenge. That's all coming up here on The Ross Owen Show. In the meantime, here's One Republic. There we go, that's a sound of One Republic and Kids. And that song is a special dedication to my first guest tonight, who happens to be one of our Band of Brothers friends, Ross McCall, who's living the high life at the moment in Cambodia. Well, I don't know what he's doing over there, but he's going to tell us all about it. How you doing?
I'm doing good, mate. I'm not sure the high life is the way to express my Cambodia experience.
Well, Dad, you know what? After I said it, I just realised, are you over there on your charity work? Are you filming or what's happening?
No, I'm filming. Yeah, I'm shooting a movie over here, but it's been you know, like a crazy couple of months really with the travel, because I just wrapped in Mexico and then I had to jump on a flight that night and come over here to do this film. And I'm experiencing all the pleasures of this beautiful country.
I saw that in your Twitter that you've been to China 3 times this year, haven't you? And you've been back in, what the hell? Who goes to China 3 times a year and then goes to Mexico and then goes to Cambodia all in the same year? That's just mad.
Honestly, this last the last 10 months, the travel has been, listen, it's champagne problems, man. But yeah, it's been a lot of air miles. So,
when are we going to see the results of this thing you're doing in Cambodia?
The movie will be out, I'd imagine. You know, a year, year and a half. These things usually take. So that's what. Yeah, I mean, I don't actually have an official date, but I'd imagine about 18 months. And then I just finished shooting Fear the Walking Dead in Mexico, and that comes out when the new season starts. So,
oh, nice one.
Yeah, it'll be good.
So much going on. We'll get you back on to tell us all about this when the time comes. But at the moment, you're going to be telling us about In Embryo. What can you tell us about that?
Well, In Embryo is actually, I dare to say it, it's one of like my favorite films. It was written and directed by a great Danish actor called Ulrik Thomsen, who people may know from Banshee and The Blacklist, and movie people would know from Vinterberg's The Celebration, which was, you know, a huge Danish film. So he wrote his first feature, and it's his directorial debut, and he cast me as his lead, and it's myself, him, and a wonderful actress called Kristen Hager. It's just a very, very dark love story, a complicated tale of two really damaged people who try and navigate this thing we called life in the LA underbelly. And we just we took it around the world. One of the reasons I was in China was actually it was in the Shanghai Film Festival, and we were nominated for best film, best director, best actor, best actress. We won nothing. China, you know. To go out there and experience that was great. And I was in Copenhagen with it this year. It's just done the Brazilian festivals, Indian, Russia. It's all over the world, which is great. And the US and Europe just released it on iTunes. So I'm trying to get people to go and have a peek.
Right.
You know, it's beautifully shot. It looks stunning, and it's a lovely little film.
You play Sean, who, and the tagline is, he's a lone rider, drug dealer, who's trapped in a world of sleaze bags and easy women. Is this biographical by any chance? Sounds like a few people I know here in Scotland.
It's so funny you even brought that tagline up. I was talking about it to the producer yesterday, because I was like, who wrote that tagline? That's, you know, it's, you know, who writes sleazebags anymore? You know, you know, it's a foreign tongue. It's a little more articulate than that, really. But yeah, I play Sean, who is he's actually the son of the biggest heroin dealer in California. But his father was killed when he was a young man, so he kind of took over the family business, if you want. And he's surrounded by people that are pretty dark, and he's living in that world, and I think he wants out of that world. And he meets Lily, who is a waitress in a diner, and he's immediately smitten and starts to get to know her a little bit. And she is she's got her own problem. She's actually a heroin addict, and so, you know, a heroin addict and a heroin dealer, you imagine the situations that are going to arise. But
right.
I think they see in each other safety and a way out. But of course, you know, when people are that damaged, it's never a pleasant outcome.
Tell us about some of the cast. Kristen Hager plays Lily.
Yeah, there's faces in here that you're absolutely going to recognize, you know, from a slew of movies. Tom Bauer's in there, who's done, you know, 1,000 films.
Yeah.
But Kristen is, US audiences know from Gotham, and I think she just did the sequel to The Kennedys. She was in Being Human for a long time. So she's just a wonderful, wonderful actress. And really the movie is she, myself, and Ulrich. You know, there are other people that come in and play certain roles, but you know, the thread of the movie is really about their navigation, you know.
Sure.
It's been really well received, which is great. We've won a ton of awards on the festival circuits now, which is great. You know, people who watch it certainly have reactions to it. You know, it's not easy viewing in the sense of, you know, you're not watching Mary Poppins. You got to sit down and it will make you think and it will make you question and it will make you sad. And, you know, it's just one of those cinematic movies that I love. You know, that's the things that I gravitate towards.
It sounds like one of those movies you could sit down with your girlfriend or your boyfriend and just say, like, let's have a night in with a movie. Let's download this movie, and it's like one of those kind of films. You've got to sit and watch it from start to finish. And I like movies like that, you know, where you've got to pay attention.
Yeah, it's absolutely that. And it's got a very European cinema feel, you know, with Ulrich and our DP, Stefan, who's German. I mean, they really brought, and Stefan, the DP, he's a genius. He's worked for Lars von Trier for many years, and he's worked with Danny Boyle. You know, he was very heavily involved with Slumdog and 127 Hours. And so he brings this really great look and energy to the film. So it's stunning to watch, you know. And it does. It has that real European flair. And in fact, American audiences are usually a little scared of that, you know. They need the explosions or the fast pace or the, you know, slow motion shots. And it's really not that, you know. It's like watching a painting sometimes. I mean, it's beautifully shot, but it's got that real European cinema feel, which of course is, you know, as an actor, that's a dream for me, you know.
Sure. And people can see the trailer. If you want to see a trailer for it, there's a trailer out there. There's one trailer's on Vimeo. I'm sure it's probably on YouTube as well. And you can download.
And it's also on the iTunes page. If you just go to iTunes and type in Embryo and go to the movie section, the trailer's there too.
Right. Well, so people, go and download this movie on iTunes. Go and watch it. In Embryo. It sounds fantastic, Ross. Now, last week, we spoke to Rick Gomez on the show, and he's got a new movie out as well, and he's got, you know, some of the boys from Band of Brothers in it with him. Jimmy Madio, Richard Speight Jr. and Frank John Hughes are in it.
I know. Where was my phone call?
I was just going to say, when are we going to see you and working with the guys again? Is there anything in the pipeline?
Unbelievable. Yeah, we're always talking about doing something together. And I think, you know, scheduling comes into play with a lot of this stuff. If some of us ain't in town, then obviously, you know, you can't use anyone, you know. I put a few of the boys in, beautiful ones. And, we use each other when we can, you know. We absolutely use each other when we can. And if somebody's got a free week or a free weekend, we jump in and do it. But I'm always giving Ricky a hard time. I'm like, really? It was Michael, you know. I would have flown back.
It's a great movie as well, that the week. It's fantastic.
I still haven't seen it, and I've heard amazing things about it. So yeah. I'm gonna download that before I get on the plane and watch it on the plane.
Definitely some laugh out loud moments in that, and it's just, again, goes to show the bond between you guys after all these years. We saw you all together recently in Bastogne. How did you find that experience? Because it was a little bit different from, we've done the Normandy thing a couple of times, but Bastogne, that was the first time. What was that like for you, the whole experience of being there, knowing, you know, what went on there?
Sure. I was actually, I was just speaking to Frank about it the other day. We were having a long chat when I was in Mexico. And, the thing about this show that's still, you know, so apparent is the bond that us guys have together, and it just gets stronger and stronger every trip we take. You know, it's not like it's becoming, oh God, we've got to do this again. You know,
I mean,
we literally, from start to finish, when we see each other at the airport, on the flight, you know, nobody really sleeps, you know, because we're just talking. We just want to hang out, and we just want to, you know, catch up if we haven't seen each other for a couple of months or whatnot. And then go visit Bastogne is just historically important for us. You know, many of us haven't been there before. And to walk in the footsteps of these great men and women that we portrayed is just a gift, and it's almost indescribable. I mean, you know, I really can't say much about it because it's indescribable. It's just an amazing thing that we get to do, so we're very grateful for that.
How did I've asked a couple of the guys this. How did you find the Bois Jacques in the woods? How did you find it comparing to the set? How close?
Oh, they had a banger. Yeah, it was. We all talked about that. I mean, it was eerily. That was the word everybody was using, but it was eerily, eerily similar. And I don't want to say it felt. Oh yeah, it felt like I was back on set. You know what I mean? It was almost like the other way around. Right? It was really crazy. Actually, it was just a very interesting, surreal thing, because walking through it just felt very familiar.
Yeah. Now, also when we had a little bit of time off in Bastogne as well to relax, and you guys, you and Rick Gomez, surprised everybody. Nick Aaron and his band were playing there, and one of the nights off, he got you up to sing, and of course Gomez jumps up on the stage with you, and you burst into a rendition of Come Together. Now, we know you did the Freddie Mercury thing, the video all those years ago, but I didn't know you could actually sing. Wow. What an amazing surprise. Ross, that's you get something else up your sleeve.
I mean, listen, I could throw that back at you, because I know you went up afterwards and you blew the crowd away as well. You know, there was a lot of hidden talents that night.
Is that Scottish thing, Ross, where Scottish people will sing at any party?
anytime anyone opens a fridge door and there's a light that starts singing, you know? Nicky was doing his gigs, and we'd spoken about it earlier, either in the day or the day before. I was so jet lagged I don't really remember much. And he said get up, you know, come up and sing a song with me. And I was like, sure, I'll do it. And so Rick had kind of said before I went up, he says, are you going up? I said, yeah, come up with me. He's like, no, I don't want to do it. I was like, all right. And so, you know, I get up there and I just started in on it. And next thing I know, he's like, absolutely, I'm in. And so he grabbed the mic and we both just, you know, had a lot of fun, man. You know, we're all rock stars deep inside. We all want to be rock stars deep inside, you know. We say actors always want to be musicians. There's an element of truth to that.
That's what I was telling people. It felt like a mini Glastonbury up there. You felt like you know, sort of Woodstock or something, you know. Hey, man, this is buzzing. This is amazing. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you know what, Ross? Listen, we wish you all the best with the new movie, In Embryo. Everybody should get out there and download it. We'll put the link on the Twitter as well, so that they can just click on the link. Makes it a whole lot easier. And we're going to play you out with the song that you sang in Bastogne. We're going to play Come Together. Unfortunately, it's not your version. It is the original Beatles version. If I had your version, if I'd known you were going to sing it, I would have recorded it and played that. But maybe another time.
Leave it to the pros, you know.
Well, listen, you take care over in Cambodia, and we'll get you back on to talk about that when, you know, a bit nearer the time when production's complete and you know what's going on with that movie. But good luck with In Embryo, and thanks for taking the time to come on the show and talk about it.
Thanks, Roscoe. I'm going to go and jump into makeup and go to work. So I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, mate. You keep cheering the Rangers on. Okay, and the Celtic, sorry.
Oh, don't you even. Don't you even.
Good resistor. Take care, Ross. Thanks again, buddy.
Bye.
Cheers, bye. Black Sky Radio. Now, we've got another special guest coming up very shortly. Jane Fallon is the author of a new book called My Sweet Revenge. And we're going to get Jane on the show. After this one from the Beatles, this is Come Together.
He come on flat top, he come grooving up slowly. He got choo-choo eyeball, he won holy roller. He got hair out to his knee. Got to be a joker, he just do what he please.
to be free. Come together.
That's the Beatles and Come Together, dedicated to Ross McCall and Rick Gomez. Joining me now from our Kansas City studio is the one, the only, Nightmare. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing great, Ross. I'm doing great. I just got my my bourbon poured. I'm good to go.
Bourbon? Oh, what kind of bourbon are you drinking tonight?
Well, tonight it's actually the original Sour Mash bourbon, the Old Crow. It's one of my favorites. It's also one of the cheapest bourbons you can get, but they've been making it the same way since 1830-something. So I'm a big fan of originals.
Is that one of those combination things? I like to call those like mutt whiskey.
No. This is not a blend. This is straight up Sour Mash bourbon. It's basically what they do when they make a sour mash bourbon is they hold back some of the mash in the mashing kettle, and yeah. Then they just add to it, and then that makes it a sweeter flavored whiskey. But for some reason they call it a sour mash because you're using a part of the expelled mash in the next run. So it's a crazy little thing, but it tastes really good, super smooth, and well worth the $16 half gallon price you pay for it.
Half a gallon. Well, you can't beat Scotch whiskey, in my opinion. And you know, I was just having a chat, as you do, with William Shatner on Twitter, and he said it's coming up for Burns Supper Day, which is this Wednesday, the 25th of January. And you have a Burns Supper, which usually involves haggis. And I was asking William Shatner if he liked haggis, and he said the best way to cook haggis is in a dishwasher. Have you heard of that?
No.
It's some technique, I can't remember the name of it. There's a cooking technique, you know, not boiling it, but it's to do with the temperature. And of course, you don't put in the chemicals. that you would normally put in with your dishes.
Yeah, I can't imagine go ahead and putting in dish soap on top of your haggis. That seems bad.
Well, some people might think it would improve the taste because a lot of people don't like haggis, but we love it in Scotland, especially with mashed turnip and mashed potato. It's lovely. Have you tried it?
And no, see, that's the thing is we can't get real haggis over here because they got a embargo on that stuff from 1989 or something like that. And I don't want Americanized haggis. I want actual haggis. I want to know what it is that you guys are eating that we can't have.
Sheep's heart, liver, lungs mixed with onion, oatmeal, spices, salt, and a bit of stock. Lovely.
Yeah, I just found an entire website that has 6 gourmet meals you can cook in your dishwasher.
Yeah, you can cook salmon and all these things. It's apparently quite common. So imagine that.
Yeah, boiled vegetables, lasagna. Come on. Lasagna in the dishwasher? I don't think so.
Listen, I can't even make a boiled egg in a pan. But now, anyway, listen, we've got another great guest coming up. I just spoke to Ross McCall, and up next we've got Jane Fallon, who's going to be talking about her latest novel. But before that, we're going to play a little bit of Coldplay from their album Head Full of Dreams. This is Up and Up.
Fixing up a car, driving it again, searching for the water, hoping for the rain. Up and up, up and up. Down upon the canvas, working in a meal, waiting for a chance to pick an Irish field. Up and up, up and up. See a bird form a diamond in a rough. See a bird soaring high, but the flood is in your blood. In your blood, underneath the storm, an umbrella is saying, sitting with the boys, it takes away the pain. Up and up, up and up. Saying, we're gonna get it together right now. We're gonna get it together somehow. We're gonna get it together and fly. For the moon, try to empty out the ocean with a spoon. Up and up, up and up. How can people suffer? How can people part? How can people struggle? How can people break your heart? Break your heart. Oh, yes, I wanna grow. Yes, I wanna feel. Yes, I wanna know. Show me how to heal it up.
driving it again. When you're in pain, when you think you had enough, don't ever give up. Don't ever give up.
There we go, Coldplay, Up and Up, the third single from their album A Head Full of Dreams. Now, our second guest in this week's show is best-selling author Jane Fallon, whose latest novel, My Sweet Revenge, was released last week, and it's already at number 5 in the bestseller lists. Jane, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
Now, I'm hearing it may actually be, the book may be at number 4 in the bestseller lists, actually. Have you heard the latest?
Well, no, there's a sort of confusion because it went in the figures that released on Tuesday, it's number 4. But actually, by the time the charts get to the newspapers on Sunday, they will have amalgamated a couple of different versions of another book. There's a film tie-in version. And so when they add them together, that will hop one place over me. So I'm number 5 in the Sunday papers.
As long as it's in the top 10, that's all that matters. And I'm sure it won't be long before it gets to number 1. It's just getting a lot of rave reviews. And I've been watching some of the stuff you've been doing to promote the book, like leaving copies in underground stations. What a brilliant idea.
Yeah, well, that's actually an initiative called Books on the Underground. And what they do is they've sort of arranged it with London Underground, because otherwise if you just went and dropped books, they'd throw them straight in the bin, I think. But they will go and they spend the whole day and they ride around on the underground and they drop them in different places and they tweet photos with clues and stuff like that. It's really exciting. And they did one, they put a golden ticket in one where whoever found that one would win a prize as well. So yeah, it was a fantastic day on Sunday just watching, you know, people pop up all over London finding them.
Yeah, and it's great. That's the power of Twitter as well, isn't it? Social media is brilliant for sharing stuff like that. I saw the one with the golden ticket, and when I saw it, whoever was holding it showed the golden ticket in the book. He placed it at the top of the escalator, and I thought somebody's going to just pick that up immediately. The first person who sees that getting put down at the top of the escalator is going to grab that, and it's going to be their lucky day.
But you never know that someone might pick it up and think, oh, I'm not really interested in that. Or they might not even flick through it and find the golden ticket. Or, you know, you just don't know. But actually, the woman that found it immediately got in contact with them to tell them that she found it, which was great. I was so pleased someone found it that, you know, appreciated it.
Mission accomplished then. Now, My Sweet Revenge, this isn't about your revenge on Ricky for all those pictures he keeps posting, is it? Of you and your friends?
No, I have to do that in secret.
A Nightmare, the tagline for My Sweet Revenge is, sometimes there's a good reason for behaving badly. I think Ricky should have that as his Twitter bio. Now, when we talk to authors, we don't like to give away too much about the plot. So, Jane, what can you tell us about the story and the characters in this book?
So basically, at the beginning of the book, our heroine Paula finds out that her husband is seeing someone else, and they've been drifting apart recently. But she doesn't want to just throw him out because she thinks that'll make it too easy for him, because he'll just run off with his mistress, she thinks, and live happily ever after. And you know, that's not good enough, really. So she decides that what she's going to do is she's going to try do everything she can to make him fall back in love with her. And then when he does, and he dumps his mistress, then she'll kick him out when it will really hurt. So obviously that's the plan in the beginning, and it all kind of goes awry and as we go along.
I like the fact that you write in your own language, whether or not the book is, you know, a worldwide thing, where I see so many other authors always seem to put it into American English almost. I mean, you use terms like half seven, and we don't do that. To me, it's very refreshing, and I love the fact that you could get almost immersed into a different feel, a different time, a different place, just on the colloquialisms of your speech patterns. I think it's beautiful.
Oh, thank you. That's a really nice thing to say. I try and make them as kind of conversational as I can. I always want them to feel either like I'm just telling a friend a story, or whoever's narrating the book is telling a story, if you know what I mean. But it's interesting, when I've had things come out in America, there is a process where you go through and they'll say, actually, no one's going to understand this word, and they try and persuade you to change odd words into the American version, which always seems very strange to me, because you're right, I always like a book that feels very much of its place.
No, absolutely. I mean,
you're not new to writing. My Sweet Revenge is your 7th novel. What I wanted to ask is, when it comes to writing, who are your sort of influences? Is it, you know, are you influenced by authors or other books?
I don't know. I mean, I definitely was sort of growing up more. What I tend to do now when I'm writing is I try not to read anything else in my genre because it just confuses me. So I've been reading a lot of sort of creepy thrillers recently. But when I was young, I was really, really influenced by Faye Weldon. I don't know how much of her stuff you know, but she has a very conversational style, sort of similar-ish, I guess. And I found a copy of one of her books on one of my older sister's shelves when I was about 15. And it was just a revelation that you could write very loosely and that everything didn't have to be in sort of perfectly constructed English. Because I think everything I'd read up to that time, you know, everyone had spoken very formally and everything was perfectly grammatically correct. And that just didn't speak to me really. So once I found her, I thought, oh no, actually you can write, you're allowed to write novels and just tell a story in a way that hopefully entertains people and, you know, not worry about whether actually it's correct to say whom here or who, you know.
Sure.
Yeah, I actually find myself drawn to those kinds of books a lot more. I read a lot of science fiction fantasy stuff. My wife does murder mysteries and things like that. And for some reason, she's absolutely enthralled with the Janet Evanevic books, the Stephanie Plum series. Understandably, it's hysterical. She writes very well. But I love the conversational aspect of what you got, how you write. I tend to find myself drawn to those more often because we've given way so much to the structure of writing. I mean, one of my favorite things to look back on is if you go back and look at old letters written by Civil War soldiers versus letters written by Vietnam soldiers. The ones in the Civil War era here in America are all like, "My dearest Beverly, times are hard." Yeah. And the ones from Vietnam is, "Hey, yo, what's up, baby?" And the structure has been lost along the way because we've relaxed a lot since, you know, 1800s. But I think that I can see where your success is very well written, just because it's a lot of fun to read. It's easy to, you know, it's more Hemingway, less Shakespeare.
Wow. Well, I'll take either of those or both. Thank you very much. I think it's really important that people often don't sort of think about exactly that language has moved on. And very early on, I had someone copy edit one of my books, and I think it was my first book, and I'd never had the experience of someone doing that before, you know, literally just going through and looking for mistakes in the spelling or whatever, that kind of editing. And when it came back, she had rearranged a lot of the sentences into perfectly grammatically correct English and rearranged a lot of the dialogue into perfectly grammatically correct English. And I was so confused. I just went through and put the whole thing back how it had been, because I just thought, that's not how people talk. And luckily, I've been so lucky ever since. I've had fantastic copy editors, but obviously we just weren't a very good match. But it's interesting that in this day and age, someone would still think that's an appropriate thing to do, to sort of take the individuality out of the way everyone speaks and put it all back into very conventional, formal language.
Well, I think you're doing a great job of that.
Do you have any say in the design for the books, the covers of the books? Because I love it, makes me hungry every time I look at the front cover of My Sweet Revenge, that big cake on the front there.
I know, it's great, isn't it? I do get involved. I do get consulted, but I have to say, I've realised that that's really not one of my strengths, which was a big surprise to me. I thought I'd be brilliant at that. and actually, the people at Penguin have people who are so much better than me. So I'm very good at going, "No, I don't like that. I don't like that." But I'm not very good at coming up with a fantastic idea myself. And this was completely, the cake was completely the idea of the people, the design people at Penguin. And actually, I love how the way it is. It does. It's really. It's really sort of tangible, isn't it? You feel like you could stick your teeth right into it. And I love the fork and the jam coming out that looks like blood. And I think they've done a really lovely job.
No,
they would never, if I didn't like something, they would never go ahead with it.
Yeah.
But I've realized that what I have to do is listen and look at what they come up with, because they're really, really smart.
Now, this is your seventh novel, as I said. Do you have a favourite character from out of all seven novels? Do you have a favourite character that
you, that's because, tricky.
Because, you know, many authors often say they miss the characters once they've written a book and the book comes to an end.
Yeah.
And you know, and they sometimes bring them back again as well in a sequel.
I know. Well, I was stupid not to do that in the first place because that would have made my life so much easier. but no, you do. I think you always miss the characters in the book you've just written because you spent so much time with them over the past year. So I'm really loving Paula, who's the heroine of the current one. But I think possibly my favourite character of all is a character called Adam from the last book, Strictly Between Us. I don't know why. There was just something about him. He's a kind of schlubby, funny character, and he just... it was a stupid thing to say, given that I wrote everything he said, but he just really made me laugh.
Now, do you base your characters, particularly in this book, have you based any of the characters on people you know?
No. What I usually do, because obviously all my friends read them and they're constantly going, is that meant to be me? so you have to be quite careful. But I think I always cherry pick a few bits and pieces from people I know, because it's really useful to have things in your head. Like, it's often useful to have a face in your head when you're writing. So, and also the way someone speaks. So I will do bits and pieces of that, but I've never directly based a main character on someone. I've based some small, not very nice characters on people that, you know, maybe I've worked with in the past or I didn't like very much, but none of the major characters.
Oh, I want to be one of those guys. I could be easily hated. It's awesome.
The only one really was in Getting Rid of Matthew, my first book. There's a character in there who is measuring her office to check that measuring her colleague's office to check that it's not bigger than hers. And that actually happened to me. Someone, a colleague of mine, was seen on her hands and knees in my office, measuring my office to make sure that I didn't have a bigger office than her.
Oh, God.
It's not the saddest thing you've ever heard in your life.
Oh, yeah. That's real close to the saddest thing. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Now, which of your books would you most like to see turned into a movie?
Oh, all of them, really, for different reasons, obviously. But I always think that The Ugly Sister would make a really good film. I mean, I think because of my background in TV, I think I do write with a sort of subconscious eye on, you know, my plots are, in a way, quite film TV. And I'm always thinking cliffhanger, because that was, you know, what I did for 20 years, really. So in a way, I think they'd all kind of translate quite well. But I always think The Ugly Sister would make a really great film, which was my book about 3 years ago, which is about a sort of retired model, but the heroine was her sister who had always been brought up in her shadow. And I really love that character. And I just feel like, you know, I feel like it could, I could make a good movie.
Yeah, well, you did work on EastEnders for a long time. So that's like the sort of the queen of the cliffhangers, the doof doof, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So you become upset. I mean, any TV series to an extent, but with something like a soap, you become absolutely obsessed with, am I hooking them? Have I got them in for next week? And actually, I think that's a really useful thing when you're writing a book. I'm constantly thinking I could lose them at any minute. I need something to like make sure that I keep everyone hooked.
Yeah.
It's a good skill to have been forced to learn, I think.
Sure thing. And is it likely to happen? Is it something you're hoping will happen eventually, is turning one of your books into a film?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. They've all been optioned pretty much at some point or other. Getting Rid of Matthew is under option in America at the moment. But you know what it's like. You get, don't get excited. It's been optioned so many times before. So you get very close and then it all falls apart and then someone else options it and you get very close. So I've learned not to really get overexcited about it. You know, that, and one of them was optioned by HBO a couple of years ago. That didn't happen. And you just learn to sort of sit back and let it all happen, really. But fingers crossed one of these days.
And what's the chances of you and Ricky getting together on a project like this?
I think in terms of our work, we're both way too much of a control freak. I really am. I can't imagine how that would work, actually, because we'd both be like, no, it has to be like this. And I think in that way where you can, if you're working with someone that, you know, don't know that well, you can argue that out in quite a civil way. I think as soon as it's someone you're very close to, you'd be like, no.
Yeah,
it would all suddenly, you'd all become very irrational about it. So I think it's probably best not.
You started writing way back in, I think, was it 2006?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
After a bout of insomnia, which is no surprise really, when after hearing that Ricky has a tendency to pee on you when he's sleepwalking. But you started with Getting Rid of Matthew back in 2006, which became a national bestseller in 2007. You went on to write 6 more novels. Have you already started on book 8?
I have. Not the actual thing, but I'm about 3/4 of the way through the synopsis, because I always like to do a very detailed synopsis before I start, which I probably will veer off completely, but I like the security of knowing that it's there. If, you know, sometimes you think, oh, I can't remember what I'm meant to be writing about, and you can go back to the synopsis and remember what the whole idea was. So yeah, I'm well into that synopsis, so I reckon I'll start writing the actual book proper in about probably 3 or 4 weeks.
That was gonna be my next question, was how was your process? What kind of you know, do you work from an outline or a synopsis, or are you just one of those writers that just sits down and starts pounding the keys because writers write and editors edit? So
no. Also, because I always want to give it in as good a state as I can, because you want to protect it as much as you can. So I wouldn't really want to give in a complete mess and let someone else sort it out. And also, no, I can't do that. I really need a synopsis myself. Apparently Stephen King doesn't write synopsis. He just starts writing, which is phenomenal. But that's not me. I need to plan and plot. And also because I like to have lots and lots of twists and turns. And so I like to spend quite a long time thinking them through and making sure they hold water and that kind of thing.
Do you ever find yourself backed into a corner that your synopsis didn't cover?
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, yeah, all the time. But then I think what you have to do, I think the main thing a writer has to do, and I get really irritated when I read books and they don't do this, is whatever situation you get your characters in, you have to think honestly, what would they do? Not what do I need them to do to make them fulfill the plot that I've decided I want. You have to think honestly, what would they do? And then you have to work from that. And if they did that, what then that? And if they did that, then that. Do you know what I mean? I think all too often people have their characters behave in absolutely insane ways just because that's what they need for the plot. And I think you're not allowed to do that, really.
I struggle with dialogue. And people can't understand that, because it's like, you talk for a living on the radio. How do you struggle with dialogue? And I'm like, well, it's different when you have to, you know, use things like he said, she said, and put it, make it sound like it's conversational and not just, you know, court reporting.
Yeah. What advice would you give to budding writers out there?
I would say properly listen to the way that people talk. Because like I said before, people don't, I mean, I'm doing it now. You start sentences, you stop them halfway through, you lose your train of thought. Nobody speaks in perfectly formulated, coherent sentences. And my other bugbear is, if you listen to the way people talk, they don't say each other's names all the time. They don't, I'm not constantly saying to you, look, Ross, now I've got this bone to pick with you, Ross, because people just don't do that. And so you don't, you know, you have to take those things on board. Don't think, if I don't have them say each other's name every 30 seconds, no one's going to know who's talking in the book. Just listen and allow your dialogue to be relaxed. I think that's the most important thing.
This is probably more geared at females because it's a sort of, you know, the story. But I find, you know, reading your books is there's stuff in there for men as well. It's not just geared to the one sex.
Yeah, I have heard that men are very happy to read my books in a way that they wouldn't, that something that was a bit more, because my books aren't sort of pink and fluffy and romances, and they haven't got like pink frilly covers kind of thing. So I have heard from a few men that they're not embarrassed to be seen with mine on the beach, which is always good.
That's the point. So, yeah, that's the point I was trying to make, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think, obviously, I would think probably the majority of my readers are women. Yeah, because I think women sort of gravitate towards female lead characters and men probably gravitate towards male. But yeah, I think hopefully I've got a few men out there.
Now, where can people get the book? I mean, basically, it's available in all good bookshops. They can get it online on Amazon. But there's also a Kindle version as well?
There is. There's a Kindle version. It's on various e-readers. I nearly said one then, but I won't. Various other e-readers and, yeah, any bookshop. There are if you're not in the UK, there are various companies that will do worldwide shipping for free. If you look into that, and, you know, we'll send you UK books without charging you shipping, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, and if you want to know more about Jane's books and keep up with everything that's going on, you can follow Jane on Twitter at Jane Fallon. Now, when is Ollie going to turn up in one of these books?
Oh, she will. She was actually, when we started this, she was sitting on my lap. She was going to join in, but she got bored and wandered off when we started this conversation. But no, she will. There usually is a sort of random cat that pops up in my book. And some, I've done all my brothers and sisters' cats, and all my nieces and nephews' cats have popped up. But for some reason, she never has yet. I think she needs a book of her own.
I think she does, because when I was promoting this interview, there was probably more comments about Ollie being in the photobombing you in the photograph. Has she still got more Twitter followers than you?
Yes, she has. has. She's got 5,000 more Twitter followers than me. She's a cat. I mean, absolutely ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Well, I know I get a lot more followers every time I tweet a picture of my dog Reggie. He's a aww, gorgeous little Jack, long-haired Jack Russell who just wandered into the studio. So I had to give him some love there. But yeah, I don't know what it is about little dogs and cats, but apparently people just go gaga for that nonsense.
And I'm the same.
Oh,
I mean,
me too.
I follow an inordinate amount of cats, dogs, several pigs on Twitter. Yeah, it's insane.
I was invited to join a Jack Russell Terrier page, a closed group on Facebook the other day, and I was like, "Oh yeah, I'll check that out." And now I can't get enough of the goofy little bastards.
I love Jack Russells, though. I absolutely love Jack Russells. They're one of my favorite. They're just funny. Their little walk, their little confident walk, just makes me laugh.
And they got the perfect little faces. They're so expressionable. They can tell you what they're thinking without even talking. It's awesome.
Yeah, amazing.
He's currently making his bed right now, kicking things all over the place.
Oh,
Nightmare, do you know how Ricky and Jane came to get Ollie? You might not know this.
No, I don't know the story behind Ollie.
There's a TV show here, a chat show called The Jonathan Ross Show. How long ago would that have been now? How old?
13 years.
Wow.
13 years ago now.
But she's Siamese, so they've got a good age range, haven't they, Siamese cats?
Yes, fingers crossed. I'm putting all my hopes on that. They do tend to be quite long-lived, I think.
Well, it was a chat show called The Jonathan Ross Show, and I believe you had just lost a pet at that time, and Jonathan came out and surprised Ricky on TV with Ollie, who was just a kitten at the time. And that's how Ollie, and it's still going strong. I think that's fantastic.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
And that's right. He actually, we were broken-hearted, and it was about a month after our other cat Colin had died, and I was desperate to get another pet, and Ricky didn't think the time was right. Just didn't think, he thought we should wait a bit. I was desperate, and luckily Jonathan rang me and said, "Oh, I'm thinking of doing this as a surprise for Ricky. What do you think? Do you think he'd like it?" And I was like, "Yes, definitely." But I had no idea until the night. I had no idea what she was gonna, what cat she was gonna be, what she was gonna look like, or anything. It was amazing.
And she's so well loved. And if you want to follow Ollie on Twitter, maybe I shouldn't say this because Jane's trying to get more.
I love her having lots of followers. It just makes her more big-headed.
It's My Left Fang on Twitter. And didn't she get that fang removed?
She did. She had a beautiful, ridiculously long left fang that used to live on the outside of her mouth that we were just obsessed with. But unfortunately, then it got some kind of infection behind it. She had to have it taken out.
Oh man, what? Because that was so much character with that fang, and all the little memes and stuff that come out are just, they're just fantastic, so hilarious. But a cat with character. I just want to say thanks for joining us. Keep up the good work that you guys do. I think it's fantastic. All the work you do for the welfare of animals. And thank you again for joining us on today's show. We wish you all the best with My Sweet Revenge, and do come back on and tell us when book number 8 is ready.
I will do. Thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Oh, it's been our pleasure. I cannot wait to finish reading this book. I'm kind of hooked. I think we should get more guys reading it just because it should be a how not to, don't screw
up.
But
if you could go out and about a bit and wave it around on public transport, that would be good.
All right. I could do that.
Now, Jane, what song do you want us to play out with? Pick a song. Who would you like to hear?
Just a random song out of anywhere. Play a Radiohead song. Something off the bends.
Okay, we'll do that right now for you. Jane Fallon, thank you very much. All the best again with My Sweet Revenge.
Thank you very much.
Speak soon.
Thank you.
Brilliant.
Thanks,
Jane.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank
you both. Cheers. Cheers. Bye. Okay, let's say hello to little Alex, who's had his first operation. And he's got another couple of procedures to go through. He's doing absolutely fantastic. Already back on Twitter doing more videos. These videos just get better and better.
I just love that little guy.
Everybody go and follow Alex on Twitter. His name is @AlexS_Journey. A little boy with a rare form of cancer. He's from the UK and he's in Kansas City at the moment. having his treatment. He's just an incredible inspiration, and you must follow him on Twitter. And also, he has a song released called Horizon on My Mind, which you must go and buy. You can get it on Amazon or iTunes. In fact, we're going to play that straight after Radiohead. I'm going to play it every week on the show. I'm going to play it straight after Radiohead for Jane, which is coming up right now. I want to thank everybody for tuning in again to this week's show. I'll be back next week with another guest. So, Nightmare, thanks for jumping in, as always, and joining us and co-hosting on this this Friday show.
Hey, anytime you got an author coming on, I want to be part of it, because I'm a big fan of reading. I think it's a lost art. I think more people need to do it. And I'm a fan of Jane's. I haven't got all of her books read yet, but I'm working on it.
I want to also thank Ross McCall for joining us on today's show. We wish him all the best with his new movie, In Embryo. So tune in next week for some more guests, and of course, every day here on Black Sky Radio, Nightmare and all the best music. We have no genre. This is Radiohead for Jane Fallon. See you next week, folks.
Peace out.
Don't leave me high. to go real far. Going back to the middle of my mind, not afraid of what I'll find. I've got a passenger in the back of my car, and I haven't got a clue exactly who they are.
The Ross Owen Show is sponsored by DDayHistorian.com.
Hi, I'm Paul Woodatch, D-Day Historian, a battlefield tour guide in Normandy, France. I offer tours of the D-Day landing beaches of 1944, along with my partner Magali. If you would like to find out more, see my website at www.ddayhistorian.com and my partner Magali's at www.ddayforyou.com.